I think that Tkiyat Shofar is the hardest mitzvah I am challenged to perform. It may seem easy. You just walk into shul and you listen. But it's not that easy, because it's an incoherent sound and you are forced to maintain your discipline. Where are the extra sheets, guys? I made a lot of sheets, okay? So Ephraim, I'm going to ask you, maybe Rachamim put the sheets back there. Ephraim Karp, I'm going to ask you to be sheet man, okay? Anyone that comes in late, you'll hand out sheets. Ephraim?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. Please, everyone, sit down quickly. We have a lot to discuss. You're meant to try to clutch those incoherent and abstract sounds, not be distracted, not let your mind wander, not think about food, and not think about tire, and not think about friends. When you're holding a lulav, there's a physical anchor. It's green, it's moist, you're holding it, and then you read in all those symbols, and you are able to insert all your thoughts and associations. There's some anchor to prevent your distraction and to rivet your imagination. When you're munching and crunching on the chewy matzah, you're munching, you're moving, your teeth, your throat, you feel it, and it's easier not to run away. So you think about what matzah means to you, what lulav means to you, what halakas neres chanukah means to you, what mikra megillah means to you, because there are words. Shofar is a sound. And we're asked to read layers and layers and layers of symbolism into the sound, because if you hear the sound of the shofar, normally mitzvah saying tzrichas kavana, I imagine with shofar it's a little bit similar, but here the kavana is even more central, because the sound is just a platform. There's no lulav, there's no objective mitzvah. If you hear the sound, you have no clue it's a shofar, you're not yotze. So presumably the symbolism you read into the shofar is an integral part of the mitzvah. And it's tiring. This year less tiring, but it's tiring and it's hard. Your mind wanders. When I'm finished shofar, I'm exhausted. I have tried and I have exerted so much mental energy and so much emotional that I just come home wasted. It's been 2-3 hours. Normally it's how long? 2-3 hours of just constant battle against distraction and thoughts. So today's shiur is meant to help that with a little bit. And we're going to assist that by reading the 30 psukim, which we recite, and that lends a greater anchor, because now you have words and now you have images and now you have varieties. And according to some Rishonim like Rashi, reading the psukim of Malchiut and the psukim of Zichronot and the psukim of Shofar are min haTorah. No tefillah is min haTorah. Even if you're chayiv to daven min haTorah, like the Rambam says, the text is totally human convention. Human beings made up the text. Great human beings, Moshe, Avram, David HaMelech. But these are psukim in the Torah, which we are obligated, at least according to Rashi, because in Parshas Emor, the Torah writes, Tzali, please take a sheet. The Torah writes, Zichron Teruah, as opposed to Pinchas, one second, Joe, where it writes, Yom Teruah. So because the Torah writes, Zichron Teruah, the mitzvah to read psukim is min haTorah, according to Rashi in the Torah and Rashi in Rosh Hashanah. Joey, we're going to hold off on questions. I just want to get through a lot, okay? So we will discuss the 10 psukim of Malchus, the 10 psukim of Zichronos, and the 10 psukim of Shofaris, and what they mean. And hopefully by the end of this year, you'll realize how challenging this imaginative obstacle course is to make it through Shofar successfully. Three themes, 10 psukim for each. Let's start with the first. The first, every theme has an introduction and a conclusion. The introduction here is well known. Aleinu l'shabach ladon akol sheets. Ephraim Karp has sheets, guys. Please try to take sheets quickly, not to be distracting. Aleinu l'shabach ladon akol l'seis kidulal yatzer b'reishus. Psukim that talk about the end of days, we'll get back to this later. For clarity's sake, I will divide the 5 psukim of Malchus into 5 categories. Not every category will have multiple psukim, but there are 5 themes that are being discussed. Theme number 1, category number 1, has 1 pasuk. It's the first pasuk. It's the shortest pasuk. Pasuk number 1, it's all on your sheets, numerated. Adonai yimloch li'olam va'ed. Straight, simple, unadorned, unqualified malchus. It is the most basic, rudimentary pasuk of the 10. No qualifications, no applications, no context, no framework. Adonai yimloch li'olam va'ed. This pasuk was stated by the Jewish people, declared at the Yamsuf, And for the first time in 2,500 years, a human community embraced Hashem's authority. 2,500 years. You read Bereishis and Noach in 2 weeks. Bereishis and Noach unfold across a 2,000-year timeline. For 2,000 years, man was stuck in theological chaos and shrouded by moral mayhem. Until one person accepted Hashem, discovered him, that person became a clan, that clan became a nation, and finally they saw the Yad Hashem and they said, Adonai Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed. There's a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Ribbono Shalom, why are you so obsessed with this people? All the time the Jews. All the time the Jews. Tzavis B'nai Yisrael. Titzavah. There are other nations. Why do you love them so much? And implicit in Moshe's questioning is, they betray you sometimes. They wander sometimes. See what Hashem tells Moshe? I will never forget these four words. I will never forget the time they said, Adonai Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed. They can wander, they can falter, but I will always be obsessed with them, or connected to them, concerned with them. Jewish identity has three layers to it. It's not all or nothing. Complete Jewish identity is composed of three basic layers, and those three layers can be pitched along a timeline that begins on Tesvav Nisan, courses through Chaf Aleph Nisan, Kriyas Yamsuf, and climaxes on Vav Sivan, Har Sinai. On Tesvav Nisan, we became a people. That is our Independence Day. That is when our national identity was distilled. Tesvav Nisan. We're no longer a clan, no longer a family, no longer a hodgepodge group of slaves. We achieved national identity. 7 days later at the Yom Suf, we accepted God's authority. 6 weeks later, we translated the general acceptance of His authority into obedience to mitzvos and studying His will, Torah and mitzvos. Complete Jewish identity is a composite of all three. National identity, you are belonging to a specific and unique people with a mission. Accepting Hashem's authority, Adonai Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed, and translating that acceptance into Torah mitzvos. To be a complete Jew, you incorporate all three layers. Not every Jew still maintains all three moments. There are some Jews that have lost Har Sinai. Millions and millions of Jews have wandered and have backpedaled from Har Sinai. They no longer maintain Torah mitzvos in the classic way. But so many millions of them are still standing at the Yom Suf reciting Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Va'ed. You will hopefully meet many of them this year in Israel. Overwhelmingly, secular Jews in Israel accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus, but they're unable to translate it into Torah and Mitzvahs. They've lost Vav Sivan, they backpedaled from Vav Sivan, but they're still standing at that moment that will recite Amir Hashem during Musaf. Many, many Jews, you ask them, secular Jews, do you accept Hashem's authority? Of course, Hashem Echad, Od Avinu Chai, B'Shamayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love you. What about Torah Mitzvah? It's hard for them. It's been beaten out of them. You'll meet those Jews. A couple, maybe 15 years ago, Yonah, I was in Los Angeles, guest rabbi. So after the meal, I had an open mic conversation with the rabbis after one of the excursions into Gaza. And they asked me, Rabbi, there's a following story taking place, making the rounds. Is it true or is it not true? The soldiers were fighting in Gaza. And as they neared a house, this mysterious turban-clad woman appeared and said, don't go into that house, it's booby-trapped. And then she disappeared, and the soldiers avoided the house, and it was indeed bombed and trapped and rigged. Then she appeared a couple hours later, don't go into that house, it's booby-trapped. And the soldiers listened to her, and she disappeared. Finally, after 3 or 4 rounds of these real, genuine warnings, they said, who are you, mysterious turban-clad woman? She said, I am Rachel Imenu, and I am here to warn the Jewish soldiers of the dangers in Gaza. So this wise guy asked me, Rabbi, is that a true story? What am I going to say? This is what I said. I said, if you can't believe that such a story exists, then you're a heretic and a skeptic. because we don't just inhabit a world that's rational and cognitive. There are worlds we can't trace with our eyes and with our ration, and it's completely conceivable that Rachel Imenu could be part of this war, even though she doesn't walk the world amongst us. If you believe it's true just because soldiers are telling the story, you're naive, because even an atheist becomes a half-believer in a foxhole. There's nothing like foxhole stories to rev up our imagination. You thought you saw, you did see, the Gemara knows about this in the end of Yevamos, foxhole stories. But to me, what's more important than factually whether it happened or didn't happen, I don't care. These are the stories our soldiers are telling. And perception is reality. And our soldiers, not the from soldiers, but every soldier in Gaza had a sharp and keen sense this wasn't a geopolitical skirmish, this wasn't a localized battle, this was a struggle of Jewish history that they were part of, that is perfectly legitimate and logical for Rachel to be part of side by side. There were 60,000 pairs of tzitzis ordered to the front before the last war in Gaza, and none of them were ordered by Hasdernikim because they had their own. They were ordered by secular Jews, knowing you're not, you don't dare go into Gaza without your bulletproof vest and your spiritual bulletproof vest. And that's the land we inhabit, and that's the world we inhabit. And sometimes people take a very binary approach to Judaism. Either you're firm or you're not firm. It's not that way. Complete firm God is a composite, but you have to ratify in people whatever layers of Judaism they still possess. And if they've fallen off of Vav Sivan, well, they still might be standing on Chaf Aleph Nisan saying, Hashem Yimloch Li'olam Vaed. And when you daven on Rosh Hashanah, maybe daven for them. Maybe daven when you say, Hashem Yimloch, Slicha, can't if someone said enough of Emsashi, okay? When you daven for them, maybe daven for the people that can come to shul in Rosh Hashanah, or can come to shul but unable to daven with the same verve and the same fervor. Stretch your davening. Don't just daven for yourself. Daven for people who can't daven. We'll talk about people who can't daven. And the truth is, there are some Jews who are falling off of Chaf Aleph Nisan. They no longer accept Hashem's authority. But many of them, millions of them, more in Chutz Laretz, still maintain that sense that we're a chosen people, and we have a mission for humanity, we're a light unto nations, a moral message, and a moral crusade, and that's also part of Jewish identity. There's something special about being a Jew. You ask them about God, they're not so sure, sadly. You ask them about mitzvot, obviously it doesn't resonate. But they have a pride that they're Jewish. And being a Jew means something. That's something you have to validate and amplify in others. So when you think about this pasuk, Hashem Yimloch, this is a pre-Har Sinai pasuk. This is a pasuk that people said that still resonates within those who still can't remember Nasa v'Nishma, but still remember Adonai Yimloch Le'olam Vaed. And that's the first pasuk, straight Malchus, the debut of Hashem's Malchus in the human stage. The second category is a set of psukim, two psukim that are nostalgic about the last time that Hashem's authority was uncontested on this planet. On Shabbos, Hashem's authority will be felt involuntarily by every creature, because every creature will be judged. Every person who will die from corona will be judged on Shabbos, and every person who will live from corona will be judged on Shabbos. And you may think it's random, but it isn't. We don't have the computational skills to understand all of Hashem's algorithms. So that's what it just looks, just like when you don't study math, it all looks random. But if you don't know the algorithms, nothing's random. These are really large algorithms. These are super large algorithms. We just don't get it, so it just looks random to us, because we don't have the computational skill. You take a bank of millions of supercomputers to even begin to imagine all the algorithms. But when was the last time Hashem's authority was palpable on this earth? When's the last time it was uncontested? Anyone know? Only the Jews accepted Hashem's authority.
Based
on
Mitzvah?
Nope.
Post-creation episode, before Malachi passed?
Oh, sad. The day the world was created. Before man's first disobedience. And you say it every day in davening. Adon Olam, Asher Malach, B'terem Kol Yitzir Nivra, before anything was created, Azai Melech, Shimon Ekra, he was a Melech. And then man sinned, and it all went south. They were highlights or better moments than worse moments, but it wasn't like that pristine, primordial, perfect world in which Hashem's presence and authority was uncontested. So we return back 5,781 years from Shabbos. Imagine that world. And you don't have to just imagine the world, because when you walk out on Shabbos, that is a newly refurbished world. It may look the same, the grass is the same, the trees are the same, the water is the same, but Hashem has re-inspirited the world every year on Rosh Hashanah, just as he did 5,781 years ago. And these are the two psukim that fall into that category. Please note them. One is source 5. Hashem malach geus lavesh. Hashem wore robes of royalty. Lavesh Hashem oz his hazar. Af tikon tevel. Here's the giveaway. Af tikon tevel. Hashem created a world. Tevel is a world. Bal timot. It will never be torn asunder. Judaism does not accept Armageddon prophecies. The world is not ending. The world may become more stable, less stable, global warming, viral infection, pandemic, but Hashem promised us this is a stable world. No asteroid will destroy this world. There could be mass death, there could be mass suffering, but the world has been stabilized by Hashem since his treaty with Noah. Af tikon tevel bal timot. Another pasuk is source number 6. Si'usharim Rashechem, famous pesukim, v'inasa pischei olam, where the gates of heaven flung open and HaKadosh Baruch Hu arrived into this world by creating this world. Miza melech HaKavod Hashem Tzevako. So that's the second category, the nostalgia for the day or the era that this day captured. This is one day we're living through history. In history, Hashem's presence has yet to be fully accepted. But this is a day to feel nostalgic, because this is a day that, as I said, involuntarily, his presence and authority is uncontested because everyone's judged. You don't have a choice. So you think about the last time that existed globally. Next category of psukim. The next time Hashem's malchus will be felt uncontested. When's the next time?
Mashiach.
The bookends of history. Creation and Mashiach. We live in between those bookends. It's called history. It feels long. Trust me, it isn't. It moves fast. And when you're out of it, it will seem very, very accelerated. Just like your first great summer camp, you can hardly remember. That's what history is going to feel. What was that? Communism? What did they call it? Feudalism? Capitalism? What were all those isms? People liked isms in that thing called... We're now in Olam Haba. We're laughing at that. In Olam Haba, they'll give you a class on human anthropology. What do these human beings do on that thing called Earth when they were living through history? Let's study. Let's study that history of humanity. A whole chapter dedicated to Trump. Let's study. Let's study human history. Let's study human history. So which psukim describe the end of time, the bookends? There are three, and they're well known. Source number 4, pasuk number 4. Ki l'ashem hamlucha moshel bagoyim. Pasuk number 8. Ve'olam moshim behar tzion l'shvodes ha'reisa. Ve'isa l'ashem hamlucha v'yashen anachal kol aretz. Ve'emu yashem echad u'shmo echad. Guys, Rosh Hashanah is a time to let your imagination soar. It's not a day of tshuva. It's a day of malchus, history, creation, humanity, and we'll talk about that in one moment. Try to imagine walking on a freshly minted earth, because that's the earth you will walk on Shabbos. Try to imagine walking on a re-landscaped earth, because that's the world you will walk on one day. And this is a taste of what it was, and a taste of what it will be. And when you say those psukim and you blow the shofar, imagine those worlds. And now we get to the fourth category. Please, guys, I forgot to mention before. I'm just looking around. Some guys are chewing gum. Please, gum is in the food category. So don't like people chewing gum this year. Yes?
So, what's the third pasuk?
Third pasuk is the last pasuk. 9. Pasuk 9. Second one? Okay. Again, 4, 8, and 9. You say them as one pasuk, but they're really two pasuk. Okay. Here's a shift. Rosh Hashanah's power and depth comes from the shifts. The shifts are not meant to be transitions, they're meant to be dichotomies. You think dichotomy means conflict, they're not. Dichotomy and paradox means that in our relationship with Hashem and His days, one variable isn't sufficient to build an interface, because we're so different from Hashem. So if I say, I like Didi, so either I like or I don't like, we're both human beings, and that serves as our interface. But I'm not like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there can't just be one factor building that interface. And because we're so different, those factors are going to clash, and one of the pivots, or the foundations there by Soloveitchik's thought is that when it comes to our relationship with Hashem, paradox is not meant to be resolved, it's meant to be sustained, and it lends energy to our relationship with Hashem. Do you love Hashem? Do you fear Hashem? Both. How do you fear and love? Well, that's only between you and Hashem. You don't fear and love any human being. I got close to it. I know a little bit of fear and love together. I was terrified of Rav Lichtenstein, and I loved him. I tasted a little bit of what that dichotomy could feel like. A little bit. That's the power of having a gadol in your life, because you're up in your game and you could just start to exponentially imagine what it's like with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, because it's just such a different relationship. Exponentially means a zillion gazillion times exponentially. But at least you can imagine. You're stepping out of day-to-day common relationships. So Rosh Hashanah is a very universal day. It's international. Every single person is being judged. It's universal, not just people. Malachim. We say in the Tanya Tog, if the malachim are trembling, well, malachim yechafezun. Not just malachim. Every atom of this universe feels Rosh Hashanah. If you had an atom spectrometer, you could sense, you would see them shimmying, because Hashem is recreating his world, and he's deciding the fate of all of reality. It's not Jewish. It's huge, broad, sweeping, panoramic, cosmic. Let your mind fly. But yet, who determines what Rosh Hashanah is? We do. The Rav would always quote the Medrash that says it in Shemayim, the Malachim are moseying around. Well, when's Rosh Hashanah going to start? When's Rosh Hashanah going to start? They ask Hashem. And Hashem says, you know what? Let's wait for the Jews. They'll tell us when it starts. And it's not even that we determine, like Pesach, where it's, okay, then 14 days after we make a determination, all of a sudden it's Pesach. Or 6 days after we decide Rosh Chodesh Sivan, it's Shavuos. It's, as we said in the old country, bada bing, bada boom. Rosh Hashanah is here. We see the new moon. Okay, it's Rosh Hashanah right now. You can't get any more direct than that. The second we decide it's Rosh Hashanah, it's Rosh Hashanah. Not even an offset of 6 days or 15 days. That day, oh, it's the new moon, it's Rosh Hashanah. It's a huge day. It's a day in which all of humanity and all of creation is being considered. But it's our day. And Hashem gave us the keys to this day. And we'll talk about those keys. And we're the only ones who know about the day. It's a day in which every single human being is undergoing the say, Chol b'nei Adam, Yavra lefanecha kivnei marom. But we know about it. It's a day in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Malchus is being imposed. But we actually want it. And it's our day. It's not just the universal day. And it's more powerfully our day if you understand the sweep of the day. If you don't get the sweep, then you don't feel as empowered, the fact that we were chosen to be the authors of this day. And there's a pasuk that we'll discuss in the end of the shiur, but I just want to cite it now, which captures this dichotomy. And you'll say it a lot, and you'll say in the beginning of Maariv, Tik'u b'chodesh shofar, b'kesa liyom chageinu. It's a day of kesa. Kesa is kisei hakavod, royalty, regality. Huge, sweeping. It also refers to the moon. What's the end of the pasuk? Kichok li Yisraelu mishpat lelokei Yaakov. You see the switch? Chok li Yisraelu mishpat lelokei Yaakov. Tikra b'chodesh shofar b'kesel. Kichok li Yisraelu mishpat lelokei Yaakov. He's the Kei Yaakov. This is the fourth category. It is where Hashem is not just the universal creator of all reality and the beginning of time and the end of time, the Melech HaKol Haaretz Bayamo, yet. Source number two. Lo hibit aven b'Yaakov, lo ra'am ol b'Yisrael, we quote Bilam, who's jealous of our position. Hashem doesn't see anything evil, no flaws with the Jewish people. Lo ra'am ol b'Yisrael, there's nothing off about the Jewish people. Hashem melokav imo, Hashem is with them. Usruas melech bo, the word shru is a double entendre, the sound of the shofar coronating them as children of the melech, and shrua also means friendship. Milashon Rea, Hashem Roi, Hashem is my friend. Hashem is our the Melech HaKol Haaretz, Truas Melech Bo. And you know what? He loves us so much, and this is a recurring theme of the day. You know what happens when you love someone? You give them a lot of nicknames. Misha, one day you make your roommates crazy. Okay, stop giving nicknames to your girlfriend. You know you love her, just marry her already. Another nickname, and another nickname, and another nickname. Hashem loves us so much. I have a son, maybe I think I gave him seven nicknames, or he said enough, I'll just call him by my regular name. Vayehi Bishurin Melech. Hashem calls us Yeshurin. That's a nickname for Yisrael. Yeshurin, my Yeshurin. It's like a little, you know, Yisrael digger. Yeshurin digger. Vayehi Bishurin Melech. Hashem is the Melech in Yeshurin. B'Sasev Rosh Hashanah. He loves when we gather. Yachad Shiftei Yisrael on the Beis HaMikdash. This is not Maisa Bereshis, Sofa Olam, Melech. This is Hashem loving us, being our Melech. Vayehi Bishurin B'Sasev Rosh Hashanah. That's the fourth category. It's an extremely important transition. When I say transition, I don't mean shifting away from, but inviting and incorporating something which seems contradictory, but really just buffets it and amplifies it. Is it universal or is it Am Yisrael? It's both. And we feel more empowered because of the universal connotations of the day. Category number one, pasuk number one, Malchus, first time, Yamsuf. Category number two, Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, Hashem Malach Geos Lavesh Lavesh, Sushar Mashiach Aminasu Pischei Olam. Category number three, bookends, end of time, not just beginning of time. Vayashem Malach, Vayelo Mashem Yartzion, Kilo Hashem Emlucha, Moshel Bagoyim. Category number four, transitioning from the Melach Al Kol Olam to Mekadesh Yisrael V'Yom HaZikaron. There is one pasuk that belongs both to category 1, 2, and 3, and 4. It's a bridge pasuk. Now you'll appreciate the pasuk. It's a pasuk in Yirmiyah, source number 7. Is Hashem the Melech al kol haaretz here, or is he Melech Yisrael? The answer is both. It's like the Tikku pasuk. Vayedev adach anavim kosev lemar. Kor amar Hashem Melech Yisrael v'goalo. He's Melech Yisrael. Goel is Hashem's role vis-a-vis the Jewish people. He's Goel Yisrael. We live a redemptive history. We don't just live a natural history. Redemptive history isn't always easy, but it's different. He's Goel Yisrael. And then the end of the pasuk shifts back into the more universal. Source number 7, Ani Rishon, Vani Acharon, Umi Baladai Ein Elokim. I'm first and last and exclusive. You hear the generalization? Ko Amar Hashem Melech Yisrael V'Golo, Ani Rishon, Ani Acharon, Umi Baladai Ein Elokim. So that's a bridge pasuk. That bridges between category 4 and category 1, 2, and 3. Which brings us to the fifth category, and to me, this is the pasuk of Rosh Hashanah for me. And to help you understand why it's the pasuk, let's discuss a machlokas about this pasuk, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, and I'll tell you a story that I think about every Rosh Hashanah that maybe you'll think about this Rosh Hashanah. There's a machlokas in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah whether Shema Yisrael is suitable as one of the 10 psukim of Malchus. Rabbi Yossi says yes, Rabbi Yehuda says no. Can anyone tell me what's the svara according to Rabbi Yehuda? Why is this not a good pasuk for Malchus? What's wrong with this pasuk, Andia? Doesn't have the word Melech. So it's an interesting question, and when Rabbi Yehuda davened in Rosh Hashanah, his 10th pasuk was a different pasuk from Tanakh. He had a different sitter. We pasuk like Rabbi Yossi, we conclude by reciting this pasuk. I want everyone to take a breath, close your eyes, and either turn around or imagine yourself turning around and imagine that after 2,000 years, Rabbi Yehuda himself walked into this room and walked into this world. Does anyone in this room have a shadow of a doubt that after the last 2,000 years of Jewish history, after millions of Jews died reciting Shema Yisrael as their last breath, after millions of Jews preserved Hashem's presence in a world that tried to eliminate it with their lives, does anyone doubt that after 2,000 years, not only would Rabbi Yehuda concede that it is a pasuk of Malchus, he would agree that it's the pasuk of Malchus. What better pasuk captures the heroic struggle to preserve Hashem's presence in this world that tried to extinguish it than the pasuk that millions of Jews recited as they're about to die? In order to face, or in inquisitions, or in gas chambers, or at the swords of Chelmoniki in the 17th century. When I say this pasuk on Rosh Hashanah, my knees shake. What right do I have to say this pasuk in my air-conditioned base medrash, about to go home and have a lavish meal? The pasuk that millions of Jews recited, generating Malchus Hashem in a world that was stacked against them. Hashem wrote this pasuk and it was just a theological pasuk about pledging allegiance to Hashem, but the Am Yisrael, psukim are living organisms. They're dynamic. As history unfolds, they take new meaning. Rabbi Akiva died al Kiddush Hashem saying Shema Yisrael, and that pasuk became the anthem of Jewish martyrdom. It became the pasuk. When do you learn out the halacha of Kiddush Hashem? The Nikdashi B'Sach B'nei Yisrael. We say, you know, Kodesh Baruch, we have our own pasuk. It's called Shema Yisrael. Of course Rabbi Yehuda would admit. Never push it. That's why the word Melech doesn't appear, because Hashem didn't make it as a pasuk of Melech. We created Malchus through our lives, and through our death, and through our love. Every year, Erev Rosh Hashanah, I go to the Beis HaKivaros. It's a minute to go to the Beis HaKivaros on Erev Rosh Hashanah. Even for people that don't normally go to cemeteries. Hasidim spend more time in cemeteries, non-Hasidim, pretty much once a year, unless there's a yard sale. And I make three stops. I go to my mishpacha. I have a great Zaidi who was a big Gadol Hador. My Zaidi was also a big Talmid Chacham and a Rav. I go, of course, to the Kvaras and my Rosh Hashiva, to Rav Lichtenstein, to Rav Amital. And then I go to a section in the cemetery in which victims of terror are buried. And I spend a few minutes at the kever of Yoni Jesner. Yoni was a Talmud from Scotland who died in a bomb in Tel Aviv about 19 years ago. And then I go to five graves of people I never met. One of the most notorious bombings during the Intifada in 2001, 2002 maybe, was the Sabara bombing. You may have heard of the pizza shop, the Sabara pizza shop. It happened Thursday afternoon. My friend had his teenage daughter, person I know, a teenage daughter caught in that bombing. Baruch Hashem, she was spared. She sat with her father Friday night in the hospital, learning Parsha. And this 14-year-old girl kept saying, Abba, Abba, what happened to that family? It was a family of Dutch immigrants eating that day in the pizza shop. The mother and the father and three or five little children were killed in a flash. You stand by those graves, I never met them, and you simply can't breathe. I start hyperventilating. You don't even know what to do. You see the dates, 3 years old, 2 years old. You see just imagine the family sitting at the pizza table, and there they are lying in five graves side by side. So the father told his daughter, I don't want to tell you what happened. He knew what had happened to the family. He didn't want to torment his daughter by this news. He said, Abba, I need to know what happened to that family. He says, why do you need to know? He asked his daughter. She said, Abba, I was lying on the pizza shop floor, bloodied and dazed, and I saw a little boy next to me bleeding to death. And I heard him say, Abba, Abba, help me, I'm in pain, I'm bleeding. And I heard his father say, I can't help you, my son, I can't help you, I'm in flames, I can't move. But I want you to stretch your arm out as far as you can and hold my hand and let's say Shema together and let's go to Shemaim together with Shema. Every year I go to those graves, I say Tehillim. I end my Tehillim by saying Shema as loud as I can, because when I say Shema, I want to be thinking of that family and about all the other people who said Shema on the way to Shemaim. And the glorious but difficult, valiant 2,000 years of wandering through this desert of history until we return to our homeland with everything stacked against us, but they could not take our love for Hashem because it's greater than our love of self. And you know what? You may be listening to this story and wondering, you probably are. I promise you that if any of you were placed under those circumstances, where your life or your love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I promise you, it's in the Jewish DNA that you would pass that test, because Avram put it there at Har Moriah. You may not know it, but it's there. It's in your DNA. There's a chromosome called Kiddush Hashem. And that's the final pasuk of Malchus. So there are five categories of Malchus Hashem. Pristine, unqualified. Sheish Yisimei Bereishis, Yimos HaMashiach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our Melech. And then finally, our pasuk Hashem. You didn't put the word Melech in that pasuk, we did. We put the Melech into this world. You gave us, I don't know why you gave us this challenge, Hashem, but we passed. Don't fall into the myth that we're midgets and previous generations are heroes. Both sides of that myth can be studied. Stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu this Rosh Hashanah with pride that you're part of a generation after the Holocaust that took another hit. After 2,000 years, another hit, but not just another hit, the worst hit since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And sadly, some people lost their religion, and no one is to judge anyone until you walk a mile in their shoes. But everyone in this room is part of a legacy and a tradition that passed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, We have news for you. We're not going anywhere. You could try to kill us. We're not going anywhere. We love you. Doesn't make a difference. This is Rav Amital's voice. I'm translating into English. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you loved us during periods that we didn't deserve it. You know what? We're going to love you even when you don't deserve it. Now that's a harsh statement. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu deserves our love because he's got reasons that we don't know. But to our eyes, there's no way to understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu deserves our love after the Holocaust, but it doesn't make a difference. When you love someone, when you love, love transcends logic. You love even though it doesn't make sense to you. And that's a deeper level of experience. All you logicians, it's such, you got to break out of the logical cell. Your logic is one form of acquiring information. It isn't the be-all and end-all, the deeper. If you're going to walk down the aisle one day and have a successful marriage, there's no formula that will prove whether you will or won't be successful. And if you're stuck in a fortress of logic, you'll never pull the trigger on the greatest decisions in your life, which you can't predict through logic. You have to just feel it. You have to sense there's something here calling me. There's something drawing me. And I'm going to follow my senses and be in touch with my gut. And then it ends, of course, with Baruch Atah Hashem, Melech HaKol Aretz, Mekadesh Yisrael, V'yom HaZikaron. That's the first section. That's one of three. I'm exhausted already. I'm not even starting a shofar yet. It's exhausting. Let's get to the second section. To understand the second section, you really have to read the introduction. Unlike the first section, the introduction is not something we know. The introduction to the first section is basically Aleinu L'Shaveach. The introduction to the second section, Zichronos, paints a very, very somber portrait, a very solemn scene. There's a lot of heaviness here. So if you read this carefully, this is not a good part of the davening for me. I don't like this part. Let's read it carefully. I'm going to love it, but... Atazocher, Masay Olam, Hashem, you remember everything. Oh, that's not good. I don't want Hashem to remember everything. A lot about my life, I don't want Hashem to remember, but he does. Okay, well, maybe he remembers my actions, but maybe, you know, I have sometimes good at. Whoa, whoa. Lefanecha niglu kol talumos v'amon nisteros. You also see into my motivation, you see into my heart, you know what I'm thinking, you know the impurity of my. Okay, well, maybe Hashem knows, but maybe he can forget a little bit. Line number two. Oh, there we go. Doesn't forget. So he sees everything, understands everything, and he doesn't forget anything. This is not landing good for me right now. I'm not a happy camper right now. Hashem knows everything, sees everything, doesn't forget anything. Hakol galui v'yadur lefanecha tzofu ma'bed arkof tzoladaros. Remember everything, kitavi chok zikaron. And you know what? Hashem isn't just judging us, and this has special resonance this year. Hashem is also judging nations. Okay, that's pretty resonant. Which nation will be successful? Which nation will collapse? Which nation will suffer millions of... So, just like I'm judging you, if my wife asks me, how did the shir go today? I'm not going to say, oh, Mark, listen, Jeremy. I say, it went well, it didn't go well. I'm looking at you and making an assessment based on a group of 50 boys in the room, whatever. Hashem is looking at us. Sometimes Hashem takes korbanos. Again, those algorithms that we don't know about from the people. Every single person that dies is because of personal guilt, or there are other algorithms that Hashem takes korbanos. Hashem takes a korban from Am Yisrael sometimes as a larger algorithm. And how it works out with divine justice, again, it's hard for us to trace all the variables. Especially since we're just looking at one world. We don't see the next world. So we're looking at half of the equation, we don't know the variables. Good luck with that. I'm a coder. I wouldn't want to code that algorithm. So this isn't looking really good right now. And then, the pasuk that I cry every year, because I cry only when I hear Rav Amital's voice and when he would cry. He would cry during this pasuk and he would sing like this, and you'll hear it and you'll sing it tomorrow night. He would say as follows. Second to last line. Hoy ashrei shelo yishkacheka. Hoy ya 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 ya. Oh, yeah, yeah. It would have been good if I didn't forget Hashem, but you know what? I didn't forget not to forget him. I spent my whole year forgetting him. So I'm not part of this Ashrei club. I wish I'd be part of the Ashrei club, Shaleish Kacheka, but if I'm honest, I'm part of the other club, and I don't want to say what that other club is called. It's not the Ashrei club, Shaleish Kacheka. It's a worse club to be part of. So the question is, where's the hope? You're now backed into a corner. No outs, no excuses, no lies, no narratives, no false movies. Hashem sees, knows, doesn't forget. You forgot. Now what? Dave Zikaron, heavy day. Guys, here's the second shift of the night. Oh, I got an idea. I got good ideas. In Brooklyn, we called it switch it up. It's called the switch up move. Switch it up. Oh, it's a day of memory? Really? That's what we're talking about? Remember this. Remember this. Remember this. Remember, I'm packing. I've got a lot of things, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'd like you to remember today. Not just me. Memories of our people. Memories of our past. I'm actually pretty excited that's Yom HaZikaron. I have a lot of things I want you to remember, Hashem. Are you ready? Here are 10. Now, I'm not going to list all 10, but I'll list a couple. First thing I'd like you to remember, Hashem, is Noach. Kakasibisar. You see how we shift? My voice has shifted, right? We shifted the whole thing. Oh, great! It's a Yom HaZikaron. That's great news! I'm psyched! Okay, this is what I'd like you to remember. Remember Noach, Vayizkor Elokim es Noach, Vayizkor Chayav, Vayizkor Beimah Shehayito Bateva, Vayavar Elokim Ruach Al Hamayim. Remember Noach? Why, where does Noach come in? Why is Noach? Why are we quoting Noach? This is a day for the Jews. So the two answers to that question. One is, as I said before, it's not a day just for the Jews. So if you're looking for people to daven for Jews who don't know how to daven, and daven for people who need your davening this year, you don't even know it's Rosh Hashanah. Most Jews know it's Rosh Hashanah. You have billions of people to daven for this year. Get started. And only 4 hours to do it because of the short davening. Don't waste any time. But there's another star of this pasuk. Who else stars in this pasuk aside from Noach? Who's the star of the pasuk? What? Read the pasuk. Who's in the pasuk? Animals. Animals. Listen really carefully. Kobe, Frank, I gotta close the doors. When we blow the shofar, part of the message of the shofar is we are trying to divest ourselves of human conceit and human sophistication and human pretense and human enlightenment, because it's all just false and pretentious. And we're trying to replace a human voice with a simple, primordial shriek of an animal. You know what effect we're looking for a shofar? Just asking for help. Simple. I'm not coming to you as a human being with my fancy schmancy ideas and fancy schmancy words and fancy schmancy. Hashem, just help me. The Medrash says that for years and years, Chana davened for a child. And what changed the year she was answered? We'll read Haftar of Chana. He said, Hashem, I failed in my tefillos until now. But this year, this is my strategy. Hashem, treat me like a cockroach. Not as Chana, not as the wife of Elkanah. I'm just a cockroach. Do cockroaches have offspring? Yeah? That's what I want. I want to be like a bug. Why am I less than a bug? And once you reduce tefillah to that more authentic, less pretentious, and less conceited level, then Hashem listens. Remember I said last week to you, why do we model shofar after Sisera's mother sobbing? Who cares about Sisera's mother? It's just because she's just a mother who loves her child and realizes she's never going to see him again. And you can't get any more basic and gut and visceral than a mother who knows her child has died. Whether that mother is a tzaddik or a rush, there's a mother here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save us. How can you divest all of that layers and just get down to something more bestial? Literally bestial. Basic. Visceral. In your heart. You're scared and you need HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be there for you.
That's why we mention animals. Kadosh Baruch Hu, remember those sweaty, stinky animals who were in the table for 12 years? Your bitur was hard. That's a whole year bitur with animals. They didn't have garden apartments, and Rabbi Tarigan coming and giving. But you remember those sweaty, stinky animals? Maybe I deserve the same. You see the animal trend here? Okay. Next pasuk, Mitzrayim. Vayishma Elokim es na'akasam. Vayiskar Elokim es briso. Es Avraham. Es Yitzchak. Es Yaakov. The first time that Hashem employed the bris. I shared this with Bashir already, so I'll be brief, but everyone has to realize the difference between Schus Avos and Bris Avos. Much, if not most, of our tefillahs today are about Bris Avos. Zocher HaBris. A Schus is quid pro quo. Avdiel, just sent your parents a Rosh Hashanah card. I remember when I was sick in South Africa, your mom gave me antibiotics. It was really good. So, if you want something, even some extra, I don't know, an extra serving of food tomorrow, I'll give it to you. But you know what? You push your luck. Yeah, it's not like they took me to Frangelica. It just gives an antibiotic. They didn't treat me. It's going to run out at some point. Well, all due respect. A bris is a covenant. A bris is an agreement. Guys, remember this. One day you'll be standing under the chuppah. What's marriage? Love? Romance? Yeah. Sometimes. But you know what it is all the time? Partnership, commitment, and covenant. Let's build a house. Let's build a family. Let's be together. Let's respect one another. Sometimes, sunshine, rainbows, and angels singing. Sometimes it's rainy, dark, and no one's really singing. But you stick together. And you help each other, and you're there for each other, and you build together, and you share finances, and you share secrets, and you share trust. And that's a covenant. That's a hard word today. That's why so many marriages are... It's not, you love more, you love less. Hopefully you have a marriage that's full of love, Baruch Hashem, but not everyone's going to be a love story every minute of their marriage. So this is the bris. The first time it's in Mitzrayim, the first time Hashem has been, now I could finally employ the bris. I made a bris in Parshas Bereishis, I had to wait all the way to, Parshas Shmos, to employ the bris. Look at that. And now we come to my second favorite pasuk of Rosh Hashanah, 1 and 1a. Two ideas in this pasuk. V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov. V'af es brisi Yitzchak. V'af es brisi Avram Eskar. V'aretz Eskar. Who can find the missing word in this pasuk? There's one word missing. Who can find the missing word and where it should be slotted? I'll give you a hint. V'zacharti es brisi Yaakov. V'af es brisi Yitzchak. The Afis Brisi Avraham Ezekar. The Haaretz Ezekar. Okay. No Zachar for Yitzchak. You know what the Medrash says? Why there's no Zachar for Yitzchak? Because Hashem reckons as follows. When I remember Avraham's life, Hashem scratches his head, Kiva Yochan, I'm just making it theatrical, and says, who was that man? Oh yeah, Avraham. He was a great man. I have to be kind to his children. What was it? Akedah and Maris Machpelah, and he discovered me in Chesed. Who was Yaakov? Oh, yeah, Yaakov. He had built a family, and he faced struggles. He never lost faith, and started the struggle with Esav. Yeah, pretty good person. Yitzchak? The Medrash says Hashem doesn't have to jog his memory. Guys, Avishai and Sally, please remember we said no talking, please. Okay? Thank you. So you don't have to jog his memory. Hashem looks down at the Mizbeach and listen carefully, and he sees the ashes of Yitzchak heaped on the Mizbeach right under the Kisei HaKavod, because Yerushalayim is right under the Kisei HaKavod, the Akedah, Har Moriah. And Hashem looks at those ashes, and it's so compelling that he doesn't have to remember. It's so immediate. Hashem doesn't have to, who was Yitzchak? Who was Avram? That's the question. Who was Yaakov? Who was Yitzchak? Hashem's looking at the ashes all day. So it's more compelling. When I say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, remember Yitzchak? Say, remember Yitzchak. Help me because of Yitzchak. Here's my second challenge of the day. Everyone listen carefully. If the ashes of one person who wasn't killed, who was willing to be killed, his virtual ashes, can compel HaKadosh Baruch Hu to answer our tefillos in Rosh Hashanah, what about the ashes of 6 million people who were actually killed and who were actually burnt in crematoria?
What's the exponential of that? If Chazal tells us, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, and when we say Yitzchak, we compel Hashem for a response because of one person who is virtually burnt, what about 6 million people who were burnt and whose ashes are strewn across the meadows of Europe? You have to daven in 220 different than you daven in 1820. You have to daven in 220 different than you daven in 1620. If you don't, then you're autistic and you're davening. These aren't sterile words. The words have new meaning. Kadosh Baruch Hu, what happened 80 years ago? I don't know. But answer us. Answer us like you answer Mishana Litzchak Avinu Bar Maria Mishana. Kadosh Baruch Hu, answer us. And you have the right to have a tone in your davening that borders on demanding, because Chazal allow you to by this matter. Say, when it comes to Yitzchak, it's just so immediate. You can ask Hashem, you know, give it to me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have to remember Yitzchak. But what about 6 million people that died in the Holocaust? And now the second part of the pasuk. Because it's all fine and good for people who are attentive and attuned to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But what about people who are no longer engaged in the life of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? What merit will Hashem remember for those people? Anyone want to help me here? Haaretz Ezkor. Fundamental difference between the Haredi view of the state of Israel and our view of the state of Israel. A Haredi view would say that in 1800 everyone is religious in a classic sense. In the year 2000, a small fraction of the Jewish people are religious. What replaced religion for most Jews? Secular nationalism, Zionism. Anything that replaces religion is paganistic. Our view is that for all sorts of historical reasons, religion in the 19th century was collapsing. Unrelated to Zionism, there were forces at play that led to the collapse of religion. And if not for, please listen carefully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu programmed in the human heart, in the Jewish heart, the ability to relate to land, history, and peoplehood, even independent of the ability to relate to Torah and mitzvahs. Hashem created two chambers in the Jewish heart. Hopefully you all have both chambers pumping in unison, together. But there's a chamber of the Jewish heart that responds to people, land, and history, even if it doesn't respond to halacha, Torah, mitzvahs. Who was the first person to move to Israel? It's a trick question if I'm asking. What's the real answer? Who was the first person to move to Israel? Nope. Terach. Terach travels from Aram Naharayim. He's halted in Haran and he dies in Haran, and Avram continues. What does Terach want in Israel? As we used to say, I'm not allowed to say this because I'm a rabbi, so I'll stop recording. Just kidding. To wake you up. He's not just a user, he's a pusher. Terach doesn't just use idols, he pushes idols. He's a seller. He wants to get to Israel to daven at the Kotel. He wants to get to Israel to Mekayim Mitzvah Shemitah. He wants to get to Eretz Yisrael so he can Mekayim Shemitah. And what does he want from Israel? Mitzvahs, Torah, Hashem? He doesn't believe in Hashem. Terach of Avodah Zarah, Hayav Aseinu, Terach of Avram. That's the part of the Jewish heart that Hashem programmed. And that lay dormant for thousands of years. And when history demanded it, Hashem pulled it out and activated it. How many millions of Jews are there across this world whose primary and only connection to Judaism is their love for this land and for our state? Where would we be without the state? Forget the Holocaust. Let's imagine the Holocaust didn't happen. But imagine, what would happen to all those millions of Jews who are losing their religion in the 19th and 20th century because of modernization and urbanization and technology and secularization? And they'd be lost. They'd be lost. You know those Jews, the taxi cab driver who quotes Tanakh better than Rabbi Liebtag. The falafel store owner has a picture of the Baba Sali and the Baba Cherebi. They're such deep-hearted Jews. That's the glimmer of Hashem. That's not a miscarriage. That's Hashem's chachma at play. Hashem had a way to save millions and millions of Jews are still part of our destiny. They serve in the army. They build this land. There are partners. When you say V'aretz Eskar, please ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please, please. There are people who are not in tune with Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They'll get there. But somehow the magic of this land has captivated so many. I know why I live in this land. Why I live in, well, now Israel's a pretty good country to live in. But when I made Aliyah, it wasn't such an easy country. And I gave up a nice life of luxury and manicured lawns and polished malls and big stadiums. And I'm not looking for a life of convenience and luxury. I'm looking for a life of prophecy. So I moved to the land of prophecy. I want my life to have meaning in the historical span. I don't just want to visit this earth, make my money, shuffle silently through and pass on. I want to be part of a historical process. And a prophetic process. And if it's upside down, the economy was hard, that's prophecy. Prophecy isn't a walk in the park. But when I ask why secular Israelis stay here, those who do stay here, why? What keeps them here? Move. Move, go, find some quieter country to live in. There's something that pulls them here. There's something that keeps them here. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's silent magnetism, drawing them to the land. Now you know why we believe in what we believe. Because if you don't ask yourself that question, maybe you're a Zionist, but you're not a religious Zionist, because if you're a religious Zionist, it has to bother you that so many Zionists are not religious. And there's your answer. It's not religious, but it's peoplehood and land and history. Okay, so we have to stop at 7:30, right? So we're only 40% through. No, dinner's 7:30, right?
7:15.
Oh, you're kidding me. Okay, so we'll cut it in half. I'll go quickly. I thought they told me 7:30. Okay. So now we'll skip to 7, 8, 9, and then I'll quickly do this. And you give me 5 minutes, 7:20 we'll end. It's really important, guys. Here's shift number three, the four shifts. Shift number three, I'll say it really quickly. Until now, you know what the scene has been? All these psukim. Hashem is judging us. Hashem is sitting across the table from us. We have our lawyers. He has his lawyers. We're negotiating. Will we live? Will we die? Where will this land? We say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, here, take a look at this, okay? Take a look at this. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Akedah, Eretz Yisrael, Noah, Behemoth, Malchus. You got like a stack of folders. And each lawyer, take this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Take this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's lawyer says, okay, let's read it. At a certain point, you're sitting at the table, and you say, what's going on here? How did we get here? Why are we going through the lawyers? Why am I talking about legal rights? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm your son. Just love me. Forget this chus, that chus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaBen Yakir Li Ephraim. Im Yelad Shashuin, this is not this right, that right, this person. Hashem, I'm your son. You love me so much that you called me Yakir, you called me Ephraim. More nicknames. You love me so much that I'm your Yelad Shashuim. You know what a Yelad Shashuim is? It's your brother and sister that no one can keep their hands off of. Maybe it was you. Every single aunt has to take a pinch. Every older brother has to ruffle your hair. There's always one throw thing in the family. Who is it in your family? I'm sure you miss them if it wasn't you. If it was you, you're happy to be out of the family. That's what a Yelad Shashuim is. It's one kid in my family who's always chepping, patching, touching, moving. Abba, enough. You're my toy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're your toy. You can't get enough of us. A pinch and a punch and a... You know what, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We're not just HaBen Yakir Li Ephraim. We're your wife. It's like a husband and a wife sitting at the table getting divorced and discussing. At a certain point, they look at each other. How did we get here? How did we get to the point where we're sitting surrounded by anonymous lawyers? Were we standing under the chuppah 5 years ago? We loved that. Ko Amar Hashem, Zachartil Lo Chesed Urayich, Abbas Kulu Soyich. It's a shift from Schos Bris, Schos Bris to Hashem. Just forget about everything. Just forget about what we deserve, what we don't deserve. Just Hashem, I'm your son. Hashem, I'm your wife. Just love me. I would always take my son's hand during a Ben Yakir really, just to feel what it is like to be a father. Say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what I'm feeling right now, feel towards me. I'm going to miss him this year. He just got married. He's always got a huge hand. That was the hand that I was holding on to during HaBen Yakir Li Ephraim. I think one day, Amir Tashem, you'll have this chus. I think about, am I a good husband or a bad husband? And I hope that I'm a good husband. Hashem, I'm trying to be the best husband I can be. Be my husband. I'm trying to be a good husband. Be Am Yisrael's husband. And then we conclude this section by mentioning Akedat Yitzchak. By Akedat Yitzchak, Yom Barach, and Tisva, Baruch Atah Hashem, Zocher Eglos. Okay. Shofaros in 6 minutes or less. 7:20, you're out. Okay? Someone give me the choke. Who really wants to get back at me? He's giving me the choke sign. It's 7:20, okay? No, come on. Who's volunteer? Jeremy. Oh, a choke sign, okay? Get out, go like this. Rip it, okay? Rip the cord. Okay, it's a chance. Shofaros is primarily contains two themes, and I'll discuss them really, really quickly. One theme is, when you hear the sound of the shofar, Hashem is coming. That is a signal of the Shechina. When was the first time it signaled the Shechina? When's the next time it's going to signal the Shechina? Psukim 1 to 3 are from Yisro. Last couple of psukim are from Yirmiyah and Tanakh, the end of days. That's a quirky. The shofar, signal of the Shechina. That's why in the middle of Rosh Hashanah, there's a Shavuos breakout. The introduction to Shofaros is all about Har Sinai, and in fact, the minhag in Yeshiva, Rav Ami tells minhag, is to sing the introduction to the tune of Akdamas. Ata niglei sabanan kivodecha alam kodshecha lidaber imam min hashamayim mishmata kolecha v'niglei saleem be'arfilei tohar. First three psukim Har Sinai, last three psukim, the shofar gadol. All I can tell you is one day you'll wake up, Akiva, you'll be walking through Silver Springs, some nice green parks, and you'll hear a crashing shofar sound. Get to the airport. That's what I can say. Get to the airport as quickly as you can. Hightail it, okay? Take the flight. V'shofar gadol yitakau, v'ovdim eretz ashur, v'nidacham eretz mitzrayim. One day, you can stay in my basement, I have plenty of room, until you get set up. I'll charge you rent. Okay. Section number 7. A minute for the money. Section number 7. Important. 10 times the word Hallel. Twice Hallel with the shofar. Hallelu b'tzilzel shema. Hallelu b'tzilzel sura. Hallelu b'teka shofar. What? This is a day of Hallel. We don't say Hallel. What do you mean Hallel? This is the source for why we have 10 psukim of Malchias, 10 psukim of Zichronis, 10 psukim of Shofars, because there are 10 times the word Hallel. It's a sad day. It's a frightening day. It's a day of gravitas. It's a day of fear. It's a day of Hallel. Well, the answer to that secret lies in Tehillim Mem Zayin, which I'm going to talk about tomorrow after davening. The parak we recite 7 times before shofar. You may want to take a look at it before Rosh Hashanah. There's an important team of psukim in that middle. Zamru Elokim Zameru. Zamru Lemalkeinu Zameru. Sing to Hashem. Ki melech kol aretz Elokim, zamru maskil. Yes, it's a day of gravitas. Yes, it's a day of depth. It's a day of fear. It's a day of fate. It's a day of fortune. It's a day of... But I am so happy to go through this day. Because I am an Eved Hashem. I want to be an Eved Hashem. And this is the day that is Malchus. Uvoti nasei Malchusecha v'yikon v'chesed kisecha. This is the day I want to live through. I want this. This is what I want. So I spend my whole life battling, sometimes better, sometimes worse. But this is what I really want. And you know what? Hashem gave me the keys. He said, blow the shofar and I'll be there for you. Well, listen, is it a day of solemnity and gravitas and depth? Or joy and pride? Answer? Both. It's not a day of hilarity and happiness. That's Purim and Hanukkah. That's one-dimensional. The phrase I can best capture is a great novel by this name, The Power and the Glory. It is a day of power and glory. But you only get that power and glory by understanding the gravitas and the magnitude of the day. And that's why in halacha there are machlokes. You know that in this room, there must be at least 30% of your ancestors, if you go back 300 years, fasted on Rosh Hashanah. People would fast on Rosh Hashanah the whole day. Because this is the Yom HaDin. How could you not fast? But our minhag is not to fast. Our minhag is to wear our nicest clothing and the best food we can. So it's not a day of happiness and saying Hallel. But it's a day of singing through the shofar. Hallelu b'seika shofar. Hallelu b'tzol tzolei serua. It's not a day of simcha yisera, as the Rambam writes. It's a They have pride, confidence, power, empowerment. Thank you, Hashem, for making me yours. Thank you, Hashem, for giving me this life. And this is the day in which it all wells up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I spend 48 hours in Rosh Hashanah being high. Maybe not the wrong word. I'm just a different planet. Literally, it's a different planet. Why would I want to be anywhere else? And that's why you sing on Rosh Hashanah. Zamri Elokim Zameru. And that's the fourth shift. Just to remind you of the four shifts. They're not shifts away. They're not 180s. They're complementary. Universal or national? Is memory frightening or is memory empowering? Three shifts. And shift number three is it a day of gravitas or pride? Answer to all those questions, both. And if you take all those three vortexes and combine them into one super hurricane, you have the power of Rosh Hashanah. Universal, international, cosmic, national, pride, happy, gravitas, memory. But we have the memories of like, if you remember, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's go. Let's experience 48 hours, the best days to be alive. The days of glory. Let your mind explode. Let your mind travel. It's not a day to bring Hashem into your heart. It's a day to bring your heart and your imagination to Hashem's planet. And Yom Kippur, you'll invite Hashem into your heart. And everything will shut down, be a dark mountain, just you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are the 30 psukim. Okay, I'll send the link to some guys if you want a more full explanation, if you ran out of time for me. Good luck, everyone. It's tiring.